Welcome to Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. I'm Stella Fong. In this show, on a cold, snowy Monday morning, we are on 17th Street in Billings. While much of the world is asleep, Yang Bugman is turning on the lights at Caramel Cookie Waffles. For 30 years, Yan and his wife Judy have made their version of the famous Truff Waffles. The bakery and cafe have become the neighborhood gathering place, nourishing and nurturing lives over the years. Let's talk with Yan and Judy and learn about how Caramel Cookie Waffles began and what's in store for the future.
And this building here used to be a bicycle shop, is that correct?
It started out as Shields Bicycle Shop when they were in West Park Plaza. It became a laundromat, a takeout pizza place, and then us.
And you've been here ever since?
And we've been here ever since, so 30 years.
And the business began in the back of your car?
Well, sort of, or in my parents' basement, however you want to look at it. We did this first in the summers. We were teaching. We had what we call a concession trailer eventually built, and now they call that a food truck, which is...
Throughout Montana, Yan and Judy traveled to fairs and festivals in their concession trailer.
We always had a stand. We'd dress in our little Dutch costume, and we had a little hand iron, and a line would start snaking around, and we'd charge 25 cents a cookie, and people would be amazed how we could split that cookie so fast with a knife and put the caramel in, and that's how we did it. We finally found this spot and turned it into a brick-and-mortar solid place.
Jan and Judy still make the Dutch cookies Kastroopwafels the old-fashioned way. The clicking sound you hear during this interview is the big cookie oven at work with 8 grills that rotate over gas flames. Let's learn from beginning to end how these thin cookie wafers filled with caramel are made.
So this is how we start in the morning. We're going to mix the shortening and the sugar, and that's probably about 70 pounds in all. And then we're going to add the eggs, about 10 pounds, and water and the crumbs. And then finally, we put 100 pounds of pastry flour in here. Basically, we want to come out at room temperature, 74 degrees.
After the dough is made, Judy explains what happens next.
Well, this is the dough extruder. It's from the 70s, from Gouda, Holland. And you put the dough in the top in the hopper. It squeezes it between the plates here. It comes out a plate at the bottom with 4 little dough pieces at a time that are exactly the right weight for each cookie.
And it just looks like a giant pasta maker.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of the same thing. Or if you had a Play-Doh factory when you were a little kid, it's that same thing too. You put the dough and you squeeze it out in the different shapes. Theoretically, you could change the size of the plate at the bottom. You can get those different plates to make bigger or smaller cookies. But we just stick with the one size.
Can you tell us about the cookie machine, the machine that Jan is working on right now? When did you get that?
We got that in September of 1987. It came over on a boat through the Panama Canal and up to Long Beach in California, then on a truck. First had to go through customs, that took a little while, and then on a truck up to Montana. And then we took the front window out of our business, out of our store here, the big panel window, and swung it through the window with just a quarter inch on each side to spare and set it up inside.
Was that luck or had you planned that?
That was luck. Swinging it through the window was luck.
Not only luck, but hard work has carried Judy and Jan over the years. Jan tells us more about the start of their business.
In the beginning, it was just Judy and myself. And Han, but Han retired. He wanted to give his kids a soccer experience, and they're in Portland, and the kids are in semi-professional soccer, and he decided to retire, which is okay with me.
We now have Jan and Judy take us through the baking of the cookies in the big oven.
It's an 8-iron, so there's 16 different sizes on there. It takes a little over a minute of actually cooking time.
So that's 32 cookies in a minute.
And it comes sliding down onto a conveyor.
He takes it off, puts it on the conveyor belt.
Jan interjects and tells us what his most important role is.
And I'm here sort of to, you know, regulate the machine and watch for problems, both Jonathan and myself. So he's the manufacturing supervisor and packaging supervisor. So between the two of us, we try to hold this machine, which we call Jumbo. We control Jumbo.
Judy now gives us a recap on how these cookies are made in Jumbo.
The cookies go on the irons over a gas flame. They go in a circle around. They flip over at the back side so that the other side of the cookie can be baked. When the iron opens, he takes the cookies off the iron and slides them onto a conveyor belt, which pushes them along to a cutter, which cuts them perfectly round, so the scraps will fall down into a bucket. It pushes them onto the conveyor belt further, going underneath a roller, which has a very fine piano wire underneath it, and it actually slices those cookies in half. The advantage of the nice raw edge that's been created by the cut, and that it's hot. As soon as it cools, which only takes like 30 seconds or, you know, maybe to a minute, it's impossible to cut at that point. So it has to be when it's hot, it'll cut it.
Well, and the people who spread the caramel on the cookies obviously know what they're doing.
Caramel has to be warm, so you have to protect your fingers. You don't want to get the hot caramel on you. It does, you have to wipe it off fast. But yeah, it's a learning process. It's a skill. It takes a while to learn the technique of putting the caramel on the cookie just right so that you don't get too much, that it leaks out, and not too little so people complain. So it takes three people to put the caramel on. We have Jonathan, who's been here quite some time, Michelle even longer, and we have Sam over here filling out the third spot. He's been here a few years now. And yeah, it's a nice little process, but it does take several people to complete it.
It is not only people power that is needed to create these cookies.
So essentially the process is, it starts at 5, even though you do some pre-prep, and you go to about 8:30 and 9 o'clock. Is that correct?
Yeah, the cookies are done baking about 9 o'clock. Then the carameling crew here takes them to the back and starts to package them. And they're done packaging at about 11:30, and you know, some are being packaged to be shipped and out to different accounts. Some are delivered here locally. The rest are kind of just going over the counter. And the scraps we use in different things. Actually, some of the cookies will go back into the cookie dough. The other scraps go into anywhere you'd use a graham cracker crumb. So I use them in the cheesecake crusts in the Nanaimo bars. The peanut butter bars. There's a few other. Anywhere I would need a graham cracker crumb in a recipe, the cookie crumbs are actually used.
Well, it's like your secret sauce.
Yes.
You add it in to enhance the flavor of whatever you're baking.
Yeah, no, it's delicious. And even the Big Dipper ice cream uses it in their famous now caramel cookie waffle ice cream.
Well, I love the joint effort of the community in featuring your product also.
So, yeah, it's very nice. And we give them crumbs, they give us ice cream. So,
I think that's a fair trade. I need to get in on that deal.
It's a wonderful deal.
You do most of the baking here.
Well, I did. And as we got busier, then Jan helped me a lot baking. And now Christine will be helping me, and she's actually taken over quite a bit. She's quite a talent. She can run circles around me.
Well,
I'm sure I moved that fast when I was younger.
I know you did. I've been on a bike with you. You're very fast. So what were some of the home treats that you provided our community all these years that you created that brought to the bakery?
The cheesecakes became very popular, and other baked goods such as, the apple turnovers, the cherry turnovers. The apple were really kind of a Dutch recipe, but then people wanted more, so I made cherry. The caramel brownies, lemon tarts and nuss tarts, different pies, but also all the time the peanut butter cookies and buffalo chip cookies and ginger cookies and snickerdoodles. It kind of goes on and on.
Well, and everything was made from scratch.
Yes, everything from scratch. carrot cakes and chocolate cakes. There's even a song I used to sing, but I don't think I should sing that.
What's the title of that song?
I don't know. It was from in eighth grade. I did a little operetta in school, and we had to sing this song about baking, and it was cookies and pies and everything nice. Our tarts and pies from the oven doth come, and we mix, mix, mix till our arms are numb.
And you followed that. That was almost like your mantra.
Yeah.
You knew at that point this was your fate.
Oh, I don't know. But yeah, that's kind of interesting, isn't it?
And it has been numbing arms that have produced the caramel cookie waffles all these years.
Well, you have had many opportunities to upgrade and expand. What has kept you from doing that?
Not really. You have to. I like to contact with customers. I don't want to be holed up in a hangar just doing cookies. And so I like the variety. I've always liked, you know, to get feedback directly from customers, and we have a lot of loyal customers that I know the names of, and that's kind of more fun than just making cookies, you know, to actually get involved with people. And so, you know, we never advertised a whole lot. We felt like word of mouth advertisement is sort of more fun to grow your business slowly. We have grown because
not actively advertising kind of helped us grow organically and slowly and to keep up with the increase in business, because there is a finite amount of cookies we can bake.
And that finite is large, especially during the holidays.
How many cookies did you make this Christmas?
Oh.
We made 500 packages for 28 days straight. So.
Oh. One day we baked twice, a double run. So we were here from early to late.
Is Monday the only days you bake?
Oh, no. We bake
every day. Almost every day.
Tomorrow and in January, probably three to four times a week.
Thanksgiving to Christmas, it's every single day.
And before that
also. Aside from the food, other goodness comes from caramel cookie waffles.
And this has become a community gathering space. There's plenty of people who come here on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's like old home week. People just kind of go from table to table and chit and chat and meet there. I think they've met people here that they wouldn't have otherwise, and they look forward to seeing each other here, and they gather for coffee and catch up with each other. And kids that have come here since they were little, and then they come back after college, and they come back with children, and they all still come and gather here. It's really fun. We even have some as employees now that came here as high school students.
The spirit is intimate and personal in this small space.
Around 50 people can be seated here. And the tables turn over really quickly sometimes.
Yeah, 20 tables, and everybody's just willing to squeeze in here and be cozy.
Yeah, it's kind of that European model where you just wait and the table opens up, or some people even share their tables.
You gotta think, we really feel grounded in this community, and I like the fact that we have a good handle on quality and service, and so we can give customers a good value. I mean, that's why they come here.
I think it's worth it. So.
And we have a long time wait staff as well that are just been here a long time, and they know everybody, and they know the way they like their coffee once they walk through the door, and they know their names, and
it's,
they have a lot of fun, actually. I know they have to make a living, but I like them also to have a life. So we're pretty family friendly with giving them vacation times and family time and to work their hours so they can do things in the community themselves.
You closed down during the summer for a period of time.
Yeah, we close the first 2 weeks of August every year. So everybody has the same vacation, and then the week between Christmas and New Year's. And we close like the weekend of Thanksgiving. We don't participate in Black Friday. And everyone goes home and has Thanksgiving with their family. And then we come back the next day and start baking cookies like crazy.
That's great.
Now that we know about Jan and Judy's past and present, Let's look into the near future.
What are some of your plans now that you're reached 30 years?
We're trying to slow down. We're of retirement age, and we're trying to find a way to turn it into a second generation.
Well, so. You're being successful with that because you do have people who are loyal and dedicated that are going to take over the business.
Yes, we have a soon-to-be son-in-law who's a chef, and I've recently hired a pastry chef.
And what are their names?
Rich Boggs is the chef, and Christine Burley will be taking over as pastry chef.
Well, I think that that's fantastic because one of the challenges is, you know, letting your legacy go on.
It's a big challenge, and we haven't figured out the details yet or that. It actually came serendipitously. Christine worked for us previously, and we had actually offered her a position here 3 years ago. I've had problems with my feet and had some operations, but she took a different position in the meantime. But now she's come back and actually just stepped in and asked if she could come back, and we said please. It was a very happy thing, and I think I could have made it through this Christmas without her.
And what's in store in the future for Jan?
And when I'm retired, I probably want to cross the United States on a vintage bicycle, which I actually just got. It's a Sam Braxton from Missoula. It's a tour friend. So, you know, I have hobbies, simmering hobbies that I would, you know, art, travel, museum, and maybe some community volunteering. It's kind of nice to do something and not being paid for it.
In the future, if you spy a couple touring the United States on bicycles, and one is riding a Sam Braxton, perhaps the Boogmans have finally decided to indeed retire. In the second part of Flavors Under the Big Sky, let's look into the near future. I'm at Carmel Cookie Waffle talking to Chef Rich Boggs and Christine Burley. There's the new blood here at the bakery and cafe. And I'm going to start with Rich because you've been here for a few years, haven't you?
I've been here for 4 years now in July full-time. I was here part-time prior to that, but yeah.
And how did you get roped into this?
Well, I am engaged to be married to Jan and Judy's eldest daughter. And when Han retired, they needed a chef, so here I was.
Tell me about your culinary background.
I started I got a job at a kitchen when I was 13, washing dishes, and then I moved up the line, and then I went and did some other things. I played football in college, bartended for a while, but cooking kind of was just the thing that I was the best at. So I've been doing it for, 16 years now, and I'm only 29, so.
I also have Christine Burley here, who I have known as Christine Helmers from the Northern Hotel, and yet she has started a new career here with passion, I would imagine, coming to this operation.
Yeah, definitely a passion in pastry, so this place is going to make that happen.
Tell me a little bit about your culinary training.
I also started when I was 13 in a little small restaurant up in Plentywood, and then just found out that I loved it, went to culinary school in Oregon, then went on to an apprenticeship in New York, went back to Oregon for another year in school where I met my husband. He brought me back to Montana. We're both from here. So that's just where it led me to be.
Rich, are you from Billings also?
I am not. I'm South Georgia, Valdosta, Georgia, to be exact. I moved up here my junior year of high school. My mom moved to Kalispell, and then I got a scholarship to play football at MSU, and I really liked Montana. I liked the cold, I guess. And then my whole family moved back, but they couldn't take me with them.
You must have loved the temperatures in the last few weeks.
It's a little chilly, which I like because I'm a big guy. But it's perfect. It's good for soup.
Well, and that's where I was going to say, cooking warms you up. Tell me about the soups. What do you do every day? Because are you still continuing on that tradition of homemade soup with chicken in the pot?
Yes, ma'am. Everything starts at right before 6, 6:30-ish. It's all scratch made. Everything's raw, raw ingredients in the morning, and a chicken in the pot. Soup's ready at 11. That's 2 soups a day, 6 days a week.
Are you still keeping some of the same recipes, or have you put in your own take on a lot of the soups?
A lot of the recipes are the same or tweaked. The volume now is a little different than it was when I first started, but I've added some things. I've taken some things away, but it's still the same deal, pretty much.
Well, Christine, you've been here since before Christmas, and I know that Judy had some traditional desserts that she had put on the menu. Did you learn all that over this time period?
Yes, I did, especially the European desserts from Holland, which have been really fun to learn and taught me a lot. So.
Give me some examples.
Well, one that I learned from Jan was the apple rum tart, and then also... Rich will have to teach me the word because I still can't get it right. The almond cookies.
Gewildekoek.
That's a mouthful.
And then also learning about the different chocolates, just Judy's teaching me those from even from Germany that we carry.
Are you going to be inputting some of your own creativity to all these desserts?
I have started a little bit. I'm hoping to do that more since we have a little more time now that it's slower after the holiday season. I'm hoping to develop more of a wedding cake industry for Caramel Cookie Waffle, just because I feel like that is lacking in the Billings area and that we could definitely do really well with that.
And Rich, you've integrated paninis, which I don't think was on the menu before your time, I believe.
They did some sandwiches. I think the menu when I got here was, there was 12 different ones and they rotate daily, and then now there's over 40, I guess, options. And then we've also added the Saturday fine dining breakfast thing. That was kind of my way to stretch my legs because I was a fine dining chef before I came here. And so we do all sorts of crazy eggs benedict and stuffed French toast and shrimp and grits. And it's kind of at my whim, but that's probably my favorite thing that I've added since I've been here is every Saturday morning I get to kind of just blow it out and do some really cool stuff. I just do one special. It's we do the breakfast that we normally have, and then everybody at the beginning of the week, we send out an email that says, you know, this week it's smoked trout omelets with beurre blanc, or this week it's, you know, lump crab eggs benedict. And I've done some other crazy ones. And then you come in at 7, it's ready to go. And I run it until I run out, which has been increasingly earlier. First week that I ran it, I did bananas foster French toast. I sold 12 orders. And then this past Saturday was our first one back from the holidays, and I did over 45 eggs benedict orders. And that's poaching the eggs by hand, so...
Christine, how is this different than doing a hotel catering or cooking operation?
It's similar, but very different. Being similar would be just keeping up with orders, with customers coming in and asking for specialty things. The difference is being able to really connect with the customers more so because it's a smaller entity and you get to see the faces of everyone more so than you would at a bigger place.
You know, it's being able to see people. There's people that come in and, you know, they'll have coffee and a pastry in the morning, and then they'll come in and get soup at lunchtime. And then again, they'll stop at, you know, 4:45 or so right before we close and get a quart of soup for home. It's different as far as, you know, it's not a special occasion restaurant. It's kind of like stopping at grandma's house, which is what I like about it. You know, it's everybody knows everybody's name. Everybody that works here, I think I'm the newest employee, and I've been here for 4 years, besides Christine. We love all of our customers like they're family members. So,
I see a lot of creative energy between the two of you, having worked in really, I would say, contemporary operations. How do you right now pass along your ideas? Meaning, do you go to Jan and say, hey, I want us to do this? Or is it something that's really self-initiated?
Jan and I have worked together, and now Christine's here too. It's very collaborative to the point of, like, I really like this idea. And when I came on, you know, I ran everything through him because I was scared to death I was going to kind of change something, and, you know, because this is their place. But now it's kind of, you know, they trust both of us to make those decisions mostly on our own. We always, you know, want everybody to be happy and be on board, but we kind of self-start now, I think.
So you had the idea of the wedding cakes. Did you present that to Jan and Judy?
In a way, but I know that they did them in the past. Judy has done them. I think we're in agreement that we want to see that more. So that was kind of something that I brought a point to because I have a background in that as well. Or I know that they're completely on board, and as well as Rich, we just haven't come to a plan yet.
Do you have any ideas as to what style of wedding cakes? Is it the fondant style or is it the old-fashioned type of wedding cakes?
You know, it's really fun for me either way. It's fun to have a customer come in and ask kind of your idea on a take that they're looking at, because it helps you become more creative and kind of have the artistic side. My favorite is probably just doing stuff with a simple buttercream. I do love to do fondant work because then you can actually paint on it, hand paint, which is a different style.
Where are your culinary inspirations coming from? Is it coming from cookbooks? Is it coming from the Food Network? Or is it something that's just you've had in you because you've had the training and you just want to now just let loose?
I would say, because I'm more on the savory side of things, I try to be as seasonal as possible, which is something that everybody tries to do. But, you know, I'll just go to the store and kind of walk around. And if I see something that looks super awesome that I've never worked with or that I have worked with, that's kind of where I get my ideas from. I mean, I read cookbooks and I watch the Food Network like anybody else, but, you know, Instagram and seeing what other people are up to. But I try to be as creative on my own as possible just by going and kind of feeling the ingredients that are available.
What about you, Christine?
I would say just being the inspiration from people that I work with, or any other chef friends that I have, that you just kind of collaborate and come up with something amazing. Mostly where I get in, then, as well as my background and training.
Do you have actual people that inspire your cooking?
Jacques Pepin, classic French chefs that are 3 times older than me. And, you know, I'm not trained. I kind of came up without proper culinary training. I did read a lot of cookbooks to get to where I am now. So I would say classic French chefs. I like Sean Brock. Trying to pay attention to what's in style, but also I really like to go back to those classic French kind of roots.
I also have a classic, I guess he's French, Daniel Boulud. He has amazing inspiration books just about being a young chef and growing up. And then also one of my mentors now, Chef Tina Power. She was my teacher in culinary school, and I've known her for probably 10 years now. She's just an amazing person. I still learn from her this day.
For chefs Bog and Burley, there is no boundary into the kitchen.
There's no barrier between, you know, the kitchen and the customers. Like, if anyone has a question for me or a complaint, I hope not, you know, there's no... You know, if you want to see something, all you got to do is ask. Half the time, my menu's set for the week before I ever get a chance to do it, because customers will just request stuff. And I think that's really cool that people love what we do so much that they like, that's what I want, that's the day I want it. So, I mean, there's no barrier, at least with me. Like, just come and say hi, give me a hug, handshake, whatever.
Perhaps Chef Burley summarizes the sentiment of Carmel Cookie Waffles the best.
Like anybody that cooks food as a living, they just feel good and feel happy and love what you eat and come back.
Jan and Judy Boogmont has sweetened Billings for over 30 years. May Chefs Rich Boggs and Christine Burley continue the trend. Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region, has been produced with the assistance of Ken Siebert. Theme music is by Parker Brown. For more information about this show, go to ypradio.org. I'm Stella Fong.